This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis. If the name is any indication, we're going to learn some things on our journey today to Field Trip Health in Santa Monica.
The interior of Field Trip Health was very spa retreat-like. You know, there's fuzzy rugs and weighted blankets and beautiful sounds and diffusers.
It looks like a spa, but in fact, it's just one of at least a dozen ketamine clinics in L.A. That's right, ketamine, or Special K, if you've ever come across it in the party scene. It's an anesthetic and a hallucinogen. There are retail clinics where an anesthesiologist administers the drug through an IV or a shot. There are companies like Field Trip, where a more spiritual experience is encouraged. And we know of at least one Botox clinic in West Hollywood that has ketamine on the menu, right under B12 infusions, all in the name of treating depression, anxiety, and a host of other ailments. Well, if you've ever wondered about these places, you're not alone. So the question is, does ketamine actually work as an antidepressant? And here's another question. Are these clinics safe? KCRW contributor Gina Pollack has this story.
First, there are a few things you should know about ketamine. Yes, it's legal. It's been FDA approved as an anesthetic for decades, so any doctor can prescribe it off-label. The generic version is cheap for clinics, but expensive for patients. A single session will set you back at least $500 or $600. And now, thanks to a growing interest in psychedelics, this 80s club drug has fully entered the wellness space.
A lot of people feel very connected to creation, to nature. I had somebody say that she felt the world being born. So it tends to be one of the best treatments to fully process trauma.
Mike Dow is one of the therapists at Field Trip Health in Santa Monica. It's part of a chain of a dozen clinics offering what they call psychedelic-assisted therapy across the U.S., Europe, and Canada. Dow is young, good-looking, and sharply dressed. And he's media savvy. He's appeared as a TV therapist on shows like Dr. Oz and Life with Kelly. And he says one thing that sets Field Trip Health apart is its interior design.
I think the first thing that people say is that it feels almost like a resort in Tulum and not a, quote, doctor's office. And that is very intentional.
Think Moon Juice, Goop, WeWork.
Lots of earthy tones, lots of pinks, lots of fractals, which are sort of the symbols and the shapes that are repeated in nature, a lot of greenery.
That's because, as any shaman or 1960s psychedelic therapist will tell you, a relaxing atmosphere can mean the difference between a good trip and a bad one. At Field Trip, a therapist sits in the room with a patient during the whole two-hour experience, and they do a series of integration sessions with them afterwards. They're basically therapy. They recommend most people do about 4 to 6 sessions. So a full course of treatment at Field Trip Health will set you back anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000.
There's a zero gravity chair. There is a sound system, a phone that has playlists, noise canceling headphones, and you're going to be reclined.
And then they give you the shot of ketamine.
You're going to what we call leave the room, which means you're going to lose a sense that you are in a room. You're going to lose a sense of who you are, of your ego, of everything that makes up you.
Some patients I spoke to said that after losing track of their identities, they traveled to a sort of dream world.
It felt like I was on like a drone riding over these just gorgeous nature scenes, these beautiful colors and realms and like altars with roses. It was a little bit like It's a Small World and Space Mountain mixed together, but like very slow, very beautiful.
Bree Emery is a creative director in her 30s who has long struggled with PTSD from childhood abuse. She says the treatment she got at Field Trip Health really helped.
I'm still experiencing clarity months later.
You're probably wondering if all of this is too good to be true. And the answer is, it might be.
It is a remarkable treatment, and I've seen it personally, you know, save people's lives. I have no doubt in that. That being said, it it's a treatment that has some real concerns attached to it, and it has to be developed responsibly.
Gerard Santacura runs the depression research program at Yale, and he's been studying ketamine for over 20 years. He says that clinical trials for ketamine in the form of a nasal spray called S-ketamine have shown the drug can be highly effective for treating depression with no major side effects. Those studies found that about 50% of people feel significantly less depressed within 24 hours of the treatment, and about 30% go into remission, meaning they're no longer depressed, at least in the short term. But Dr. Santacura points to at least three major concerns he has with the way the drug is marketed at clinics like Field Trip Health. Problem number one, studies are ongoing, and there's a lot we still don't know.
There is very limited data of ketamine's efficacy and safety, or S-ketamine's efficacy and safety, and anything beyond treatment-resistant depression.
When he says anything beyond treatment-resistant depression, he's talking about the participants in the most rigorous clinical trials for ketamine. All of them had to have already tried at least two regular antidepressants that didn't work. That's a very specific subset of people. The problem is, most ketamine clinics aren't just giving the drug to people with treatment-resistant depression. They're marketing it to people with a whole range of health issues. Here's Dow.
I personally think it's the jack of all trades. Like, I've seen it work with depression. I've seen it work with anxiety, PTSD, and then all these other sort of out-of-the-box concerns, you know, endometriosis, chronic Lyme disease. If you're feeling really stuck, if you are going through a divorce and you're just feeling, you know, like you just can't get started in your life.
Dr. Santacura says,
we just don't have enough information to say that.
Then there's problem number two.
There's also the psychological risk. I mean, this is a pretty difficult treatment for some people to go through.
Some people, like Julia Wild, a writer who has struggled with depression since high school. In 2020, she signed up for 6 sessions at Ketamine Clinics of Los Angeles, one of the largest clinics in LA. The first session, Wild says, was fine. But her second trip took a pretty dark turn.
It was just this existence, this loop that I would be stuck in forever. I felt like I was in hell.
Unlike Field Trip, Ketamine Clinics of Los Angeles doesn't have therapists in the room with patients. Nurses observe them on monitors, and there's a button they can push for emergencies.
I hit the button several times. I like waved my hands, and nobody came in for several minutes.
Sam Mandel of Ketamine Clinics of Los Angeles told me the clinic monitors patients' vitals and keeps eyes and ears on them at all times, and that their team is known for being especially attentive to patients' needs. And Wild says a nurse did come to turn down her dosage eventually, which helped. But then, she says, things got worse.
Within a couple hours, I felt the worst depression and intense suicidal urges I've ever had. I was not prepared for that side effect.
Dr. Santacura says Wild's experience is rare, but not unheard of.
A small percentage of people clearly feel worse after the treatments. Another percentage of people feel really bad during the treatments. I mean, really bad. You know, when I say a small percent, I mean like 5%. That is not that small when you're looking at large numbers of people.
Dr. Santacura is most concerned, though, about problem number three. Most of these clinics work with patients for a few weeks or a month. You just show up for your appointment, get the ketamine dose, and leave. But what patients really need, he says, is a doctor or therapist who's following up with them long term.
I mean, it's actually not good clinical practice to start Prozac and not follow somebody closely, no less start something like ketamine and not have a good follow-up, you know, management plan for somebody.
Depression is a painful and debilitating illness. There's a serious need for new treatments, and there's a lot of hope that ketamine could be the answer. Just look at Julia Wild. Despite having a trip that felt like being trapped in hell, she says she would try it again. For KCRW, I'm Gina Pollack.
Well, as Gina just pointed out, ketamine is being used to treat some mental health issues in L.A., and there's a push for another drug to be used for treatment here, psilocybin, a.k.a. magic mushrooms. Well, the California State Senate approved a bill last year that would decriminalize those mushrooms along with other psychedelic substances. The measure, though, still needs to pass the state assembly. The city of Oakland has already effectively decriminalized them, and there are high hopes that here in L.A., someday, magic mushrooms will be legal for treatment or even recreationally. So, is there anything to be learned from the Bay about the shroom business? To answer that, Mary Carrion is here. She's a contributor here on GLA and a journalist who focuses on cannabis and other drugs, legal or illegal. She's also a podcaster as well. Hey, Mary.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. So a few minutes ago, we heard about some uses of ketamine, you know, toward mental health issues. What is psilocybin being used to treat?
Psilocybin mushrooms are used to treat a number of things. Mostly what we're seeing in the media and in the news is it's psilocybin mushrooms' impact on depression and anxiety. I would say that there is now a lot of data from clinical trials showing the impact on depression, like severe depression, major depressive disorder, and also anxiety, which is excellent. These two things are obviously impacting more people than ever these days, too. I would also say that it is impacting people who are trying to break addictions, like smoking cessation, for instance. And sometimes, in some instances, it can also help with their addictions with drinking alcohol. And another really interesting study that has multiple studies, actually, there have been about using psilocybin to treat mental health conditions such as eating disorders, too, which I find so fascinating. And further, it can also help treat cluster headaches as well.
What's the most common way to ingest it, Mary? Do folks still eat them raw? I can remember maybe making Kool-Aid with them, you know, stuff like that. I mean, how do folks ingest mushrooms?
In multiple different ways. The way that the market is moving right now it's moving with a lot of innovation. People are still consuming them as chocolates in various kinds of different chocolates, whether that's a chocolate bar or little bonbon style chocolates, but also there are gummies now in the market, like microdose gummies. So people can eat, you know, a little Mario Starburst kind of thing, little candy. There is also psilocybin drinks. There are also tinctures that you can take. There are also pixie sticks, psilocybin pixie sticks, which is really crazy. That's the newest one I've seen that has been really strange and interesting to me. But I would say that in therapeutic settings, I would say that they are probably distributed in capsules and or the raw material, which means just the raw mushrooms. In the clinical trials, depending on which clinical trial we're talking about, the clinicians have essentially worked with chemists to synthesize psilocybin and put it into a pill form. So I think that that's how some people are taking it as well.
Okay. It's also grown. I know there's the growers of psilocybin mushrooms are up in Northern California, but LA is a huge market for these psychedelics. In fact, the biggest sales of it in the state are right here, right?
Yes, correct.
And why is that? I mean, why is LA, I mean, obviously sheer population, but why is LA such a big market for it?
Well, I think that especially now, after everything we've been through, people are trying to heal. And right now, I think people are more experimental than ever before. So I think that that is partly contributing to this whole large market that we're experiencing down here. And also, I would say that in a way, it kind of is mirroring the cannabis market in the sense that while the culture of cannabis originated up in Northern California, it's in Southern California that has the largest market for cannabis. And it's the same with mushrooms. And I think it's similar in that way. And I just think that it has something to do with Hollywood being here and the money being here and just, again, sheer volume size, just, you know, population size. That I think is also playing a big part in it, too.
Is there a push for more folks to be cultivating here in LA? Is it I mean, they're being grown, obviously, in Northern California. But, I mean, can it be grown down here? Is there a way to do that?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I think so. One of the initiatives for legalizing mushrooms in the state on the state level was the California Psilocybin Legalization Initiative. And one of the people who was, you know, putting that all together was also teaching classes for people how to cultivate. And right now, you know, while they were teaching one way how to cultivate, and while that initiative also had some issues with it and is not going to be on the ballot moving forward in 2022, the idea is that, you know, cultivation classes are now more popular than ever. People down here are learning how to cultivate. And also, there are some of the biggest mushroom labs in the world here as well, like huge mushroom labs. And, you know, that's just how it is. That's how people are down here. They do things huge, if that makes sense. And they're also learning from the people up in Northern California as well. And I would say that right now, the community, the mushroom growing community, and this whole movement of grow your own is huge, because people are trying to kind of keep their autonomy, not really give into a market if they don't have to. They want to create their own to be able to have their own. So it's kind of like cultivating vegetables in your backyard.
And learning a lot from our neighbors to the north, right? And what's going on
exactly.
In Oakland.
Yep, yeah, exactly, exactly. Yep, and in many ways, I know a lot of people down here are trying to emulate what happened in Oakland, and that's, you know, trying to organize, essentially, and that's why the Bay to LA mushroom pipeline kind of exists. It's not necessarily that there's, you know, a bunch of mushrooms being funneled down this pipeline. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't, but it's that we're learning how the people in LA are learning from people like groups like the Oakland Hi-Fi crew who put on the California Psychedelic Conference over the weekend here in Los Angeles. People in LA are learning from groups like them on how to better organize down here and create a bigger community so that there's one massive community instead of it being like a disjointed space here down in LA and throughout the state.
Mary Carrion, independent journalist and podcaster, a contributor here to Greater LA. Mary, thanks for coming on and talking to us about it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it, Steve.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Sporting a jean jacket on a cool California night can show you have some rugged, casual style. But tomorrow, if you don your favorite denim outfit, you'll be showing off something else. Support for survivors of sexual violence. That's because April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and the last Wednesday of the month is Denim Day, a day for educating and building community around the issue. Here in Los Angeles, the nonprofit group Peace Over Violence is hosting a rally at LA City Hall tomorrow morning. Lizeth Castillo is managing attorney with the organization. She's here to tell us more about Denim Day. Hi, Lizeth.
Hi.
And just a word of caution about some of the things we'll be talking about vis-a-vis sexual violence. Why denim, by the way? What does denim symbolize?
Right. Well, so Denim Day actually has its roots back in Italy in the 1990s. There was a case where a young teenager was sexually assaulted by her driving instructor. So she was raped when they were out on their very first drive together. This man was arrested, convicted, and was serving his sentence. At some point while he was in jail, he appealed the decision by the court in Italy, and it was taken to the Italian Supreme Court, where his sentence was actually overturned because there was this sort of justification submitted that the girl at the time was wearing such tight jeans that there was no way that she could have actually gotten them off alone, or that he would have been able to get them off alone. I'm sorry. So there was this issue of applied consent and the presumption that she would have at some point helped him by taking off her jeans. And therefore, that's kind of how like the jeans excuse came up. After that, there was huge rallies in Italy. And from there in California, a few assemblywomen saw what was happening and also did a small protest here. Our executive director, Patty Giggins, was around when this was happening as well and kind of shut this off. And the rest is Denim Day history, like 20 years in the making.
Sexual violence is a topic, Lisette, that doesn't often get talked about, right, publicly. I mean, is that part of the reason for holding a very public event tomorrow?
So I think it's yes, it's not only to spread awareness, but it's also a continued form of protest, right? I think that this movement will continue to happen until, you know, we live in a very real society where the threat of sexual violence based on what you're wearing, based on your appearance, based on your gender, all of these things are obsolete, which is one of our missions, is not just helping survivors, but also preventing violence.
Talk a little bit about Peace Over Violence, the group you work with.
Yes.
It helps survivors, right, of sexual assault. What does that involve?
So we're actually a trauma crisis center. So what it is actually is survivors can come in. And we, although we do help survivors of sexual assault, we're also domestic violence based. So it's both domestic violence and sexual assault, stalking, teen dating violence, trafficking. So we're kind of a one-stop shop. So survivors can come in here when they need access to services like housing, case management, counseling, support groups. But then we also provide legal services. So we also do immigration and family law for those who need maybe like restraining orders, who have, you know, divorce cases and child support cases, paternity cases. And then we also provide immigration relief.
How do people get connected with your organization and the resources that you do have to offer?
So there's a number of ways. The easiest way would be, you know, because we are a trauma center, you can actually walk in and request services for the first time. But then you can also call us via our hotline. We also staff the 24-hour rape and battering hotline. I'll just shout out the numbers just in case anyone wants to take note. There are quite a few, but the main one is 626-793-3385. That's available for 24 hours support, but then you can also get connected to services either through Peace Over Violence or other organizations that may be better suited to help. And then there's also via our website, so folks can actually request services through our website, peaceoverviolence.org. So there's quite a different number of ways. You can also contact us directly via phone. Our phone number is 213-955-9090, and from there you can just let our receptionist know what services you're interested in, and they'll get you connected.
We'll put those links, by the way, on the website as well. You know, this event wasn't held the past couple of years, right, because of the pandemic. And I wonder, how did the pandemic affect survivors of sexual assault when maybe it wasn't so easy to access helpful resources, the stuff that you guys do?
Yeah, so that's correct. We actually did not have an in-person rally the last 2 years. Last year, we did a virtual rally in collaboration with Denim Day New York City. But generally, we saw an uptick in all kinds of violence throughout the pandemic, right? So not just sexual violence, but also domestic violence, huge spikes. Underreporting is always going to be an issue in this area, right? So while in LA County, there was somewhere between like a 10 to 16% increase of domestic violence and sexual assault calls. Those numbers are still very much skewed because there's a huge issue with underreporting and access to services in general.
And getting more information out there through days like Denim Day, right, which is tomorrow. When and where tomorrow? At LA City Hall, downtown LA. What time and what do you do?
Yeah, so it's tomorrow, Wednesday the 27th, from 10:30 to 12 p.m. on the south lawn of City Hall. So bring your denim. We also have action kits that are available online with downloadable goodies. So you can actually get that through our website, Peace Over Violence. So we have like posters that are available for download, you know, just campaign posters, slogans, like anything else. And those action kits are also useful if you want to have your own Denim Day, either at your organization, your school, whatever it may be. And then show up to the rally wearing denim and just be ready to, you know, collaborate and be in a supportive environment with the rest of our partner organizations and our employees and other survivors who really just want to embrace this day fully.
Well, good luck with the event tomorrow. Denim Day, downtown L.A. at L.A. City Hall, 10:30. Lizeth Castillo, managing attorney over at the Legal Advocacy Project. That's at Peace Over Violence. Lizeth, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much for helping us spread the word.
That's all the time we have for today. We're back tomorrow with a discussion about masks. Maybe you're still wearing them inside. Maybe you're over them. I will tell you, the pandemic is still around and spreading. How dangerous is it for you if you wear one and the person shopping next to you at, say, Ralph's or Vaughn's doesn't? That's tomorrow on GLA. Always online at kcrw.com/greaterLA, where you can share your thoughts or even subscribe to the podcast. Or, of course, you can get the podcast wherever you subscribe to your podcasts. Or at the website, kcrw.com/GLA. Jenna Cagle, Rebecca Ludman, Robin Estrin, Juliana Mayo, Sonia Geis, Ray Guarna, Rich Garcia, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for your ear tonight. Have a great night.